Most of what we say in the first talk, people really forget because they're a bit tired, or so they believe. But the truth is that when a person is tired and they just come from a long journey, that's the best time to brainwash them, to get under their defenses. And so you get in there to try and encourage them, you know, some of these little teachings to learn how to let go. And I say that because it was so often that the teachings I heard from a monk like Ajahn Chah and other monks as well, that I didn't think they were very important at the time. I even really didn't sort of think I remembered them. But now, over those years, they kept coming up again. It was as if the seeds which are planted in the desert, you know, in the deserts around the central part of Australia, they are waiting there, dormant, and you would never believe that they're underneath the ground. But when there's a big rainstorm, the whole desert blooms with all these amazing flowers. And you don't know when they're going to bloom. It's just when the conditions are right and supportive, when the rain falls, then it all comes up. And that is like some of the teachings which you hear. You may disagree with them. You may think that makes no sense. You may think that's irrelevant, but it doesn't matter. They have been planted in you, you know, by a monk like Ajahn Chah. And then when they're really needed, it comes up. They say, thank you, even though long deceased. You know, the teachings of the Buddha or your teachings of your teachers, they are still active. And you don't really know it until it actually happens. So, one of those teachings, he would always say, he would, and again, you heard lots of talks. You can listen to this on YouTube. So when you listen to it live, you've got to make it more active to keep people's attention. So Ajahn Chah would pick up a stick like this. This was in the on the arms round. I remember exactly the place where he first taught me this. I forgot about it, but then visiting many, many, many years later, oh, this is the place Ajahn Chah did this to me. He'd pick up a stick. He wouldn't hit me with it. He was a very nice monk. He deserved it a few times, but no. He'd pick up a stick and he'd say, how heavy is this stick? How heavy is it? And before I could answer, he'd throw it away. And say, it's only heavy when you hold it. So as long as you put it down, then it's not heavy anymore. So, what does he mean? He means all of your worries and concerns and problems and stuff you have to do in life. That is what we learn how to put down on this retreat. So we can have some peace, some freedom, some rest. And don't ever think, well, what does Ajahn Brahm know about this stuff? Sometimes you saw me yesterday running around all over the place because so many things were difficult in my life, both in monastery and this place and that place and all over the place. I had many, many burdens. But the only way you can survive is by learning how to let go and take a rest in the middle of chaos. Because, you know, one of my favorite sayings, it's on one of the backs of people's T-shirts or one of those bags. I see those sayings all over the place, and I say, well, I said that. And one of those sayings is, don't worry, everything's out of control. What a wonderful saying that is. It's all out of control anyway, so it's no one's fault. So why worry? Everything is out of control. Woohoo! Well, that also means if it can be controllable, then you've got a problem. Then you've got to think about it, worry about it. That's when you're holding the stick. It's really so heavy. But realizing everything's out of control, I've been doing lots and lots of metta meditation to Kim Jong-un. Hasn't worked. He's totally out of control. Donald Trump? May Trump be happy and well. No, that doesn't work. Or maybe it has worked. Maybe, I don't know, maybe because of my loving kindness, that they haven't nuked each other yet. That's why sometimes people ask me, said, all these blessings you do, and you're blessing cars, and you know, sometimes you bless a new car, and then 3 days later, it's in a crash. And they say, you thought you blessed it. Yes, but you didn't get injured. So, you know, it worked. If you know how to use spin, you can use anything. Or just be careful over Malaysia, Singapore, because this was a scam which was going around some years ago. They said that when a person dies, they get the monks or the nuns in to do the chanting. You've obviously done that just as they're dying. And sometimes they say, well, if the last part of their body, which is warm, is the head, that means a stream of consciousness goes out through the top, which means it goes to heaven. But if the last part of their body, which is warm, is their feet, that means they've gone to the other place, to hell. So they get all the monks because some, you know, some of the grandparents, you know, they're a bit scallywags. You know, they're drinking and having a second wife or a third wife or I don't know how many wives. What is that for? And I realized when I was young, even one wife is too much. That's why I became a monk. But anyway, I say with husbands, what do you want a husband for? Oh, a lot of trouble, a lot of problems. That's why sometimes it's a katina ceremony soon. That's on the 8th of October here and the 15th of October over in Dhammasara. And so people say, you know, what can we donate? Can I sort of donate my husband to the monastery? Can I donate my wife to Dhammasara? I'm sure if that was possible, it would be very popular. But no, only joking. Some people have a wonderful time together. But they're usually in denial. But why are you laughing? Because there's some truth to it, that's why. But anyway, when I was going way off the track. You're supposed to be talking about meditation. I was talking about... what? Sorry? Letting go of your husband and wife. No, it's like letting go of things which are really heavy in your life. Oh, yes, right. And sometimes I have to do that. That's how I survive, you know, in this world. Because remember that time, I don't know if you were there, Eileen, when I was invited to give a talk at Buddhist Union, Harbour Front City or whatever it was, big auditorium there. It was their 50th anniversary or something. Anyway, I gave a big talk over there and, you know, how to deal with stress and stuff. And at the very end, I will never forget this guy, a young man, came to the microphone, and his question was, that's all very well for you, Ajahn Brahm. You live in a monastery, at peace with the world, no problems, not like me who lives in the world. And you know, sometimes, you know, he sucked me in there, and I said, hang on. This is what I've been doing since I got up at 4 o'clock in the morning. And all the work and responsibilities and duties I've been doing all day without rest. It's about 10 o'clock by that time. And when I finished, he said, this is just what I've been doing today. And then he went back to the microphone a second time and said, wow, I never realized how hard monks have to work in today's world. I always wanted to become a monk one day, but not now. I'm going to just enjoy IT. So, you know how to be able to do this, but to be able to do it, as I was saying yesterday, the attitude you have to all the work you have to do, that is crucial. So you learn how to let go. Don't hold it. So the first thing with meditation, letting go, is letting go of all the past and the future. What on earth are you doing with that in this retreat center? All of your financial problems, all of your problems with your parents or with your children, all the problems with the world. You know, just problems with the world. When I was in Thailand, there was obviously no internet, there was no radio, TV, there wasn't even any newspapers. You didn't know what was going on in the world. And so I remember a person coming up and saying, oh, did you know that your country, UK, is at war with Argentina? And I thought, yeah, what's the punchline? Come on, this is a joke, isn't it? We don't do wars these days. And of course, it was actually true. And there was one other day I remember, look, I just didn't know what day of the week or what year it was even. Because why do you need to know years? You know, so you go according to the moon cycle, you know what's the rains season, the hot season and the cold season, because that fits into Southeast Asia. And that's what I knew. When they say what year it was very difficult. What day it was even worse. But then, as soon as I came over here to Australia, about 33, 34 years ago, there was this young Nepalese man. Now, because he was Nepalese, Nepalese Buddhists would come to our little temple in Magnolia Street. And one day, he was in the back of Magnolia Street, he had an epileptic fit. So I had to call the ambulance. And then, when the ambulance came, the first thing they asked him is what day of the week it was. And he didn't know, so they put him straight in the ambulance and took him to hospital. And from that day on, I always remember to know what day of the week it was. Because that's the first thing they ask you. So it's okay to be timeless sometimes, but please, what day of the week is it today? Okay, you can stay here. I won't call the ambulance. So, and please remember that also, sisters. Sometimes too much meditation, don't know what day of the week it is, and then you're in big trouble. But generally, when we're here, you're pretty safe. We know what's going on, so you don't need to worry about time. So let go of the past. That is a big, heavy stick, which we should throw away a long time ago. But how can we let go of the past? People say it's easier said than done. And when people mention, I said, no, it's easier done than said. Don't say things, just do it. And again, I also remember, I forget the name of the gentleman, he was one of the ministers in the Singapore government. It was the old days that the Buddhist fellowship was over in Geylang. And it was amazing, I had actually a free afternoon. I forgot what they feel like these days. Free afternoon. I had a free afternoon when I was in Singapore. And I heard that the head monk of the Buddhist library, you know, the big center had heaps and heaps of debt. So they were trying to do a fundraising jog or walk. And in those days, you know, I wasn't so, what's it called, donut-shaped. So I volunteered, yeah, let's go and help out. I brought a whole lot of people from the Buddhist Fellowship to help out in this charity walk. And as soon as, that's very nice, when you surprise people and they don't expect you, it's always a bit of a boost. So, you know, he saw me and was very pleased that I came along and brought some people to help with his charity. But then I had to give a speech. And I was talking to, I forget the name of the gentleman, the minister, talking to him beforehand, and I said, well, are you also going on the jog as well? He said, no, I'm just giving the talk. So I said, oh, you're one of these politicians who talks the walk, but doesn't walk the talk. And he liked that one. What was his name? He wasn't one of the big ministers. It wasn't Corbyn one or anything. It was one of the... sounds like it, yeah. So there's many people like that. They go to these charity walks or charity jogs and they just give the speech and then they go somewhere else. They talk the walk. They don't walk the talk. But it's easier doing things than talking about it. So don't just talk about it, just do it. So how do we do it? How can we let go of the past? What works? If you say, let go, get out of here, you don't belong, I don't want you, then what happens? You're giving that past more attention and it gets worse. There was I love reading articles, psychology articles, which challenge perceptions, which make people see a different angle. And this was an article by a psychologist, a group of psychologists, who did some research after the Paddington rail crash many, many years ago, just outside Paddington railway station in West London. There was some signal failure and two trains had a head-on collision. Many, many people were injured and died. And the government offered them free counselling if you want to. And so many people availed themselves of that counselling. But this very enterprising psychologist did a follow-up of those people who went to counselling and those people who did not go to counselling. And took an account of, you know, the trauma they'd experienced or seen with their own eyes and other factors to see what the difference was. And the difference was quite shocking, that the people who didn't go to counselling actually had a much better recovery rate. Therapists didn't like that news, challenging their profession. But it's not challenging the profession. Why does that happen? Because when we focus on a problem, when we keep thinking about it, you know, when we are almost forced to keep focusing on it, sometimes it helps, but other times it just amplifies it. It becomes bigger. It feeds it. And here I'm going to introduce an old story, which those of you who have listened to my talks online or in live or seen it in the books, I often say this story because it is very powerful. You apply it to so many different situations, especially in meditation, especially in learning how to let go of the past. Anger eating monster. I don't know how many times, usually two or three times a week when people come up to the ask for free counseling after lunch. I tell people there's no such thing as a free lunch for me. You know, you think you just give it dana in the bowl, but I pay for that afterwards, half an hour now, talking to people with their problems. But anyway, that's okay. But it's a powerful teaching. Once upon a time, and I always change it a tiny bit every time, because you tell the same old story every time. People get so bored. So you always put a little bit of twist in here and a twist in there to make it a little bit more interesting. So once upon a time, there was a gay emperor. Now, I started off this story when I first told it, an emperor, and then I changed it to an empress to gender equity. But because this is the 21st century, now it's a gay emperor. So the gay emperor had left the palace to go and name Mardi Gras. And please don't get me into trouble for this. I'm trying to be as fair as possible. Went into the Mardi Gras. While he was away sort of celebrating, a big monster came into the palace. Really frightening and terrifying and stinky and repulsive. That's why they call them monsters. And when he came into the palace, the guards, the security, instead of checking his ID, putting him through the X-ray machine, as they do to me when I go traveling. Sometimes people say, oh, Ajahn Brahm, people must know you and must be very easily going to the airports. No, it depends which airport. Sometimes they look at me and they obviously know I'm religious. You've got like a robe and you've got, you know, what's under there, Ajahn Brahm? Suicide belt? So it's very easy. I just open it up, bang, and they can see what's there. So it's nice that you're not having any buttons and stuff. You just, you know, open up and you can see afterwards. So it doesn't take so much time. So anyway, a really terrifying monster. And all the security, they just, you know, dived under the tables. They went behind the huge flower pots, went in the cupboards, hid wherever they could. Because this monster was incredibly scary. And that allowed the monster to walk right through the palace into the main hall and sit on the emperor's throne. And as soon as he sat on the throne, that was the point where all the security, that was going too far. They came out from under the tables. They came out from in the cupboards. They came out from behind the flower pots and the big flower stands, pot plants, whatever you call it. And anyway, they said, "Get out of here! Who do you think you are? You don't belong in here. Get out now!" And those few unkind words, and those few unhelpful gestures, and those few sort of very vicious thoughts. What happened to the monster? The monster grew bigger and more frightening and more smelly. And it was, I don't know how long, when the emperor came back. And as soon as the emperor saw the situation, he knew exactly what to do. That was why he had become the emperor. He said, "Welcome. Thank you so much for coming to visit me. Why didn't you email me before? I could have arranged a nice reception for you. Has anyone got you something to drink yet? We have fruit juice. We have orange juice, apple juice, a mixture of this and a mixture of that. What would you like to drink? We could have tea. We've even got Sri Lankan tea with tinkiri. You know what tinkiri is? It's like, it's amazing that I don't know all that many words in foreign languages, but noisy, that is Burmese, the same thing. Condensed milk. Would you like some of that?" And it was really kind to this monster. And at those few kind deeds, words, or even thoughts, what happened to the monster? An inch smaller, less ugly, less smelly, less offensive. And then everyone understood, that's what we should do. Be kind. Welcome, Kim Jong-un. Do you need any more fuel for your missiles? Welcome, Mr. Trump. Have you got enough credit for your Twitter account? Can I top it up for you, please? And those few kind words, the monster grew much smaller, less smelly, less of a problem. And everyone understood what to do. So, what they did? They, you know, found out not just what he wanted to drink, what he wanted to eat. Do you want some dim sum, some porridge in the morning? Do you have porridge this morning? Yes. Nah. What else do you have? Dumplings for lunch? I shouldn't say such things, because now I think, we want dumplings. We want... So, anyway, what do you want? And so they settled on pizza. You know why pizza? Because if you go to any pizza delivery, you can get monster size pizza. So they got a big monster-sized pizza delivered, and some people gave him a back massage. Imagine this huge monster, actually enormous. A dozen of the security guards were giving a massage. You know what it's like sometimes you've got a sore back, just over there, ooh, you had all said the monster, ooh, just there, ooh, that's nice, oh yeah. Obviously, you've never massaged monsters before, have you? But anyway, they were so kind to this monster. Every time I got out of kindness, he just shrank a little bit more. Until he was so tiny, this little monster. That one more act of kindness, and the monster vanished completely away. Disappeared. And that is based on a story in the suttas, believe it or not. And now you can understand the parts which I added, which was 90%. But the whole story about anger-eating monster, that was taught by the Buddha. You give them anger, get out of here, you don't belong. And it gets bigger and worse. Memories of the past. You're taught, let go of them. And some people say, get rid of them. Come, get out of here. I don't remember that. That was a nasty memory. What do I have to keep thinking about that for? It is, it's yucky. So get out. I don't want to think about it anymore. And you tend to keep thinking about it. It gets worse. So, the anger-eating monster, simile. All those terrible thoughts about the past. The way you've been terribly treated. Exploited. Abused. Treated as a doormat. Treat, or what else? Similar. But you say, oh, why me? I gave a talk about that the other night in the monastery. Why me? And the answer is, why not? Well, I read in some Buddhist book, 98-year-old, I think it was, 98-year-old woman, healthy all her life. Nothing wrong with her, just had a wonderful life. She went to the hospital, had a checkup, she had cancer. And she came out saying, why me? I couldn't believe that. You got away with it for so long, and now you say, why me? I think it's fair, fair. Anyway, why me, why not? So instead of having ill will towards the past, we have kindness towards the past. Welcome, past. Thank you. Forgive me all these wonderful learning experiences. They were tough. They were difficult. I'd rather just have a nice, easy life. But when life does become difficult, which it does for each one of you, thank you so much. You give it kindness. And the memories of the past, oh, that was really difficult, but I learned so much from it. Then, because you're giving kindness to the past, I call it softening the past with kindness. The monster doesn't get so hard. It gets really soft and gentle. You can play around with it, and then it vanishes, gets smaller until it goes. So if when you're meditating here, if when you're having lunch, if when you're trying to go to sleep at night, if you think about all the terrible things which have happened to you today, which is really unfair, it shouldn't happen, people should be more sensitive, they should know what to do, blah, blah, blah. Instead, saying thank you so much to my past for teaching me so well. For giving me the opportunities to practice things like patience and forgiveness and tolerance and just non-expectation. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to practice all of those. Which means that the past doesn't become hard and spiky, keep on scratching you. The past gets so soft. Whether it's what you've done or other people have done, it doesn't really matter. You're kind to yourself, you're kind to others. It is a type of letting go called forgiveness. Forgiveness. Giving people the benefit of the doubt. Giving yourself the benefit of the doubt. Even as a monk or a nun, you don't have to be perfect. Venerable Nuns, it's quite okay to fall asleep during my talk. You don't have to be perfect. You have to be human. So he gives beautiful kindness to your past. And then when you give that kindness to your past, it means it's not a problem anymore. You try and get rid of the past. Try and solve it. Try and figure it out. Trying to get even. Trying to get revenge. That's like feeding the anger eating monster. It gets bigger and bigger and bigger. Kindness, thank you so much. And that means that that monster gets so small, it doesn't bother you anymore. Isn't it wonderful to let free of the past? Now, free of the future. How do you become free of the future? You're kind to the future. You don't give it ill will. That's another monster. The future is a monster. You say, no, I don't want this to happen. You get afraid. Be careful to eat only healthy food. What is healthy food anyway? Healthy food, pure food, is what people give with a pure heart. That's a really nice saying. You give with a pure heart. So it's blessed food. So because people give all this food to the monks with a very pure heart, it's blessed, it's pure food. So once it's offered to me, then you can partake of it. It's been purified by offering it to a monk. So those of you who do like the sort of food I like, make sure it's given to me first of all, and then you can eat it, and all the cholesterol, the diabetes, the salt, the sugar, that's all taken care of by being holified by a monk or a nun. Anyway, I think it's still out in the, hope you've seen it already, there is a little cartoon, which is, I think, out there between the two offices, a little squirrel. A squirrel is on the couch at the psychiatrist's office. And the psychologist, you know, asking him, the squirrel, so why are you here? And the squirrel said, well, when I found out you are what you eat, I realized I was nuts. Ho, ho, ho. There's a little cartoon over there. Someone sent me, which is very good. So if you want to go nuts, eat lots of cashews, almonds, walnuts. But anyway, let's go back to serious about it. So the future, be kind to it. Doesn't matter what happens. You always find out a way somewhere. That's what I always, you know, was saying. If, you know, you get asked to be a teacher and teach the Dhamma and teach meditation and go in front of TV cameras and everything gets recorded, aren't you nervous, Ajahn Brahm? No, of course not. Because I look at the future, I'm always kind to it. If people like the talk, wonderful. You make people happy. You're serving the Dhamma and people actually do a much, much better job with their lives. But if you really mess up and offend this person, offend that person, they get really upset at you, that's really good. Then I can relax and have a nice, simple life. That's why I started telling bad jokes a long time ago. I thought that would get rid of people. It doesn't, you know. When you tell bad jokes, just people come and ask for more. It's absolutely true. So anyway, so whatever happens is fine. That's being kind to the future. You die young, that means I've avoided the old people's homes. Have you ever been to the old folks' homes? They try and make it nice, but you know, it's not that nice sometimes. You know, so as somebody once says, every extra couple of years you add on your life through exercise and eating well, that's an extra couple of years added in the old people's home. Oops. It's the quality of life which is the most important. That is what is important. And again, just on humour, and just how humour actually is often tells you about something very deep. Some the deep Dhamma is not what you expect. And that was the comedian George Burns, the American comedian. And I remember just this interview he did on his 98th birthday. 98 years old. And he was still performing in nightclubs. And the person interviewing him, a great interview, said, "Aren't you worried about your lifestyle? You eat hamburgers, you stay up late at night, you smoke cigarettes, you drink, whiskey by the bottle. Aren't you worried about your lifestyle?" And his reply was, "I'm not worried about my lifestyle. My wife was worried, and that's why she died 20 years before me." That is what kills you. The attitude, more than anything else. The worry, the negativity, the obsession about the future, the worry what's going to happen tomorrow, stock markets, whatever. That is what kills you. Even years ago in Malaysia, traveling from Taiping, I was visiting Akachito and then going off to Penang, and in a car, quite a few people in there, and one of the people in there was this doctor, forget her name now, she was last year of practice, she's retiring, and she was oncologist, and we're just chatting about all things, and I'll never forget what she said. As an oncologist, said, "This is my career, treating people with cancers." And she said, "There's one thing I've found out now. I don't really need to look at the biopsies anymore. I do because I have to, but it's not really necessary. And I don't really worry whether it's stage one, stage two, stage three, stage four. Is there any more than stage four?" That's stage five cancer. You're in heaven. You're in the box. So whatever stage it is, that's not really important to me. She said, "I can tell, I think, with 90% accuracy." And this is just on anecdotal follow-through. 90% accuracy, I can tell who's going to survive and who's not by their attitude. I remember she telling me that. The attitude towards a sickness like that. How you regard it, how you look at it. So that tells me more than anything else an accurate prognosis. So sometimes I get it wrong, but most times correct. And I always remember that, it hit me, because that's the future. I'm going to die. I've only got 4 months to live. What's going to happen? That kills you. The worry more than anything else. That is giving negativity to the future. If you give this wonderful loving kindness towards the future, open the door of your heart to the future. If you die, it doesn't matter. You can get another life afterwards. Just like, if you fail an exam, you can always do it again. What was it? This girl, she was, I think, a Malaysian girl. She was trying to do her ELS, which is like the English exam, to get permanent residence. 16 times she'd done that exam. 16 times she failed. True story, great story. So after 16 times, she came to see me in Nala Mara Center, and she said, "This is a waste of time." I said, "No, it's not. I'll do some chanting for you." So I gave her some chanting. And she rang up a few days later. "I passed!" You see, it works. No, all that worked was not the power of chanting. It was the power of, not worrying. Looking into the future, believing you might pass, because she had faith in me. And it worked. She did pass. That is nothing sort of supernatural. It's just psychology. Get some chant, a bit of holy water, a bit of rigmarole, razzmatazz. You don't know what I'm chanting anyway. Sometimes people ask me that, why do you chant it in a Pali when no one else knows the meaning of it? Because if you make a mistake, you don't know. And I've done that before, you know that story. They're still married, it's amazing. Tired because I do too much, but doing some chanting, I did the funeral chants at the marriage. I mean, it must have been something, just Freudian slip, because the way I view marriage and funerals, pretty similar. But, I say that marriage is like a pack of playing cards. Marriage is like a pack of playing cards. You start off with two hearts, and then you move on to a diamond. Then you move on to clubs and a spade. I actually told that joke at a wedding. Sometimes I'm very inappropriate where I tell my jokes. But they loved it. They say I want to give their marriage some realism. But anyway, we try not to go on to the clubs and the spades in marriage. But... So, we learn how to have this, we do the charting and stuff, because it gives people a different view of the future. Maybe it's going to be okay, it's going to work. Positive attitude, kindness, give it a benefit of the doubt. Don't just see the two bad bricks in the future, see the 998 good bricks. It's amazing how often that works. So the same with your future, anything you worry about, everything you're concerned about in the future. I sometimes look back at my life. Everything I worried about, it didn't happen. It didn't happen. All the things I thought, this is intolerable. Usually what happens was something much worse. But it didn't matter at all. You can cope with anything. So that type of attitude, you're not worried about the future, all comes from being kind. Welcome, monster of the future. Welcome. Thank you for visiting me. What can I give you? How can I care for you? I'm not going to try and get rid of you. I'm welcoming you. And that welcoming is another word for calling letting go. Letting it be. This beautiful kindness. And of course, I've often done that to little sneezes and coughs, aches and pains. Welcome. Irritating nose. Thank you for being right in front of my face. At least, I'm focusing on the tip of my nose now because it's dripping. So we have this beautiful welcoming. And you know what happens when you do that? You really focus on it and you relax. You don't try and get rid of it. Because you're relaxing, giving it ease, giving it peace, so often it just disappears. It vanishes. It's amazing. Because what was really happening is a lot of the reactions like, a dripping nose, an itch, a cough, even an ache in your knees, a lot of it is overreacting. The body's immune system just going overboard. It doesn't really need that. So get out of here, you don't belong. Just makes it worse. So welcome, thank you. Thank you for being here. Irritating nose. It's amazing, then it disappears. Give it a try, the angry eating monster. It's letting go of the future, letting go of the past, not worrying about stuff. And then you get a pretty healthy body and a very peaceful mind. Just imagine you had no worries about the past. All loose ends tied up, nothing to worry about in the past. Imagine you had no worries about the future. Totally confident. You know what that feels like? You see that in 5, 6, 7-year-old children. Playing around, no worries about the future, no worries about the past. Enjoying one another's company. Sometimes somebody, Mummy, Sally hit me. 1 minute later, they're playing they've been friends for life. Totally let go of stuff. Can we do that? Oh, not worrying about the future. Do you think, like those of you who got a dog or a cat at home, do you think that worries about the future? No, I've seen dogs, they have this beautiful sleep, just slipping down, not worrying about the future at all. They're much wiser than human beings. Do you reckon? Sometimes, you know, if you look at dogs, they don't have to go to work on a Monday morning. They don't have to sit in traffic. They don't have to worry about office politics. All they need to do is play around. Their only job and task to do in life is to be patted and wag a tail and take the owner for a walk. You gotta take the That's all they need to do. Free healthcare, no worries at all. Us? Oh, we have to worry about the size of our dog kennels and how many appliances we have and how big our car and what our kids are doing and how our investments are going. And So if dogs can do that, how do they do that? Sometimes not worrying about the past or the future. Letting it go. It's only heavy when you worry about it. The past you can't change anyway. It's done. It's finished. So leave it alone. I can't change what happened in the past. So just let it go. There is a word which on one of these retreats about a year ago, 6 months ago, someone said that their son was never tidying up his room, never really doing his homework, leaving everything in a mess, never taking out the garbage. And so the mother asked him, "When are you going to take the garbage out, son?" And he would reply, "None yet." "When are you going to clean up your room?" He would say, "None yet." "When are you going to do the homework?" He would say, "None yet." And she didn't know what that meant. Do you know what that word meant? None yet, a very modern word. You know that children always actually invent new words, you know, just to be cool. You know, you have like, you know, that teenage speak. So what does Nanya mean? It's short for none your business, Mum. So I thought that was a nice word because the past is Nanya. None your business. The future, it is Nanya. None your business. So what is your business? The present moment. That's your business. So whenever a thought of the past comes up, "Oh, you know, should I have done that? It's a terrible thing I did." Remember just to say, "Nanya. None your business, Ajahn Brahm. None your business, me." No business, you can't change it. The future? Do you think you can change the future? Do you think by using your powers you can actually make sure the stock market goes up? Or what else do you want? Or that the dumplings are being cooked right now? Get into Michelle's mind. "You will cook dumplings, you will cook dumplings." All the thinking about it, that won't affect anything. So it's none your business. It's none your. It's letting it go. Having the sniffles, it's none your business. See, well, it's just your nose's business. Nose, you look after myself. You know, I'm not my business. So that way, we can let go of the past and the future. We just be here. So when you just do that much present moment awareness, imagine what it must feel like. You've got nothing to do. Doing something is always about the future. You've got nothing to be angry or averse about. That's all about the past. Straight away, the first two hindrances to meditation, you know, just wanting and aversion, all of that is just cut off straight away. You're not holding on to the past or the future. You've thrown it away, none of your business. Which means that you have to be in the moment. Now, you know, when you get into the present moment, sometimes it's uncomfortable at first. But you get used to it. You get used to it being free. Just like prisoners. People who've been in jail. When they first come out of jail, Do you think they feel comfortable? Some prisoners don't want to get out of jail. They've got used to being in prison. It's their comfort zone. And they're terrified how they will cope outside. Just like many people, you got comfortable worrying about the past or worrying about the future. So what happens sometimes? You come in the present moment, and I think, I'd rather be worried about the past than the future. That's my comfort zone. It's amazing just how many people, if nothing's going on in your life, or in the monastery, or in the retreat center, if nothing's going on, it's boring. People want to make drama. People love drama. If they haven't got any in their family, they go onto the TV and get some drama from the TV. Something to worry about. Something to be excited about. If you haven't got enough to be scared about in life, you go on these death drops at the adventure playgrounds, like Disney World or whatever. Scare the hell out of yourself. You know, and that's against human rights to do that to detain terrorists. But you actually pay for that to happen, to scare the wits out of yourself. Why do people do that? Because we like to be stimulated with drama, something to worry about, something to think about. People aren't used to being in the present moment. And you can't savor it. Just like my taste in music growing up. Started off with liking rock music. Jimi Hendrix, powerful, really loud. And then later on, just starting to value like Beethoven. And then going to even more refined stuff. These Beethoven addicts, it was like more like Bach or Monteverdi. And then going from there to the sounds of nature. And going from there to silence. At the time, I always thought this was really delightful. But as you refine your mind, you go to more and more beautiful states of sound. More delightful. More refined. That's like the present moment. If you played orchestral music too, that chamber music, at a hard rock concert, you'll find people walk out boring. I haven't learned how to appreciate the refined pleasure of stillness, present moment awareness. So after a while, when you first get into present moment awareness, you tend to run away. Seek something to think about. Seek a fantasy. Seek a drama. Something to do. But after a while, you get accustomed to the beauty of the present moment. And as you become accustomed to the beauty of the present moment awareness, your mind gets more refined. And it gets even more refined as the present moment turns to stillness and the deep meditations, which will come in a talk in another day. But just please hang out, bear with the present moment, because it's there that all the meditation, all the joy, all the happiness, all the wisdom comes from. You can never find enlightenment tomorrow, nor even the next moment. You can never find any satisfaction in the past. Instead, the Dharma can only be found right in the smack bang middle of this present moment. You can't solve the past. Can't solve the future. You can only solve the present. So that is where we begin. Kindness to the past. Kindness to the future. And then it disappears. Like the anger eating monster. Don't try to get rid of it. Be kind to it. And then it disappears. Da da da. And if it doesn't work, because I said yesterday, you can always ask for your money back. But will you get it back? No, but you can ask. There we go. Okay, so this afternoon at 4, That says no interviews today. I need a bit of a rest. And you need just to get used to the place. And at 4 p.m. we have a sutta class. Have you organized with the projector and stuff? Wait. No, you just put a projector over here. So you have to go and harass Scotty and Christina again. Because they know where it is. And then afterwards, question and answer tonight. So that's from 8 till... Well, you speak. It should be 9 o'clock, but it's usually 9:30. And so if you do have any questions about what I've said, or questions about what I haven't said, you can write it down on a piece of paper. And if I know the answer, I'll answer it. If it's too deep for me, I will answer it with Nanya. Nanya business. Do people actually ask me that? Just, what do monks wear under their robes? Nanya. But also, somebody asked me that, and I said, look, in Buddhism, in Buddhism we have this tradition, just don't disbelieve, come and see. So you become a monk, and then you'll find out. Experience it for yourself. So anyway, there we go. So remember the three sadhus?
Sadhu!
Yeah, very good. Put energy into whatever you do. Okie dokie. Announcements, yes.
Hi everyone, this is
something
called Kim, when you leave.
Really?
Yeah, so, hi everyone, my name is TJ. Together with Eileen, we're the recruitment manager. So I just wanted to give some announcements for some people who came today last night. So in the dining hall, there's actually the beauty rock search and so on that they need to do for the retreat product. So you can refer to that. Please look up what you have to do. If there are any changes that you can do, some can do, you can put either Eileen or myself. So that's what happens. It's like physical difficulty. The other point is about the Q&A. So there is a basket with paper outside the meeting hall. So if there are any questions, you can write it inside there. There will be interviews from tomorrow onwards until the 6th of October. The schedule will be put up. We have actually just enough slots for each retreatant, but it's entirely purely optional. And I'll actually encourage people to put your questions in the interview, not in the interview box, but into the question basket, because some of the questions can be repeated, as you will see later tonight, where they tend to, somebody will ask about what's the meaning of past life, and then there will be three slips of paper asking what the meaning of the past life is. Right? So rather than having Ajahn tie it up with him answering such questions, if we all answer in here, and these questions are answered once and for all. So that's all I have.
Very good. Excellent. Okay, announcing that the interviews are always recorded to be used against you to raise donations for the night. We don't, okay. No, we don't do things like that, honestly. Okay, so now please, it's free time, so just enjoy the place. If you need to take a rest, take a rest. Take a shower, take a shower. The place is yours. You don't always have to sit meditation in this room. You can sit in your little your room in your cottage. It's like your little cave, and that's very nice for people who, are incontinent, they need to go to the toilet a lot, or they're just whatever. And so everything is there for you. So you can actually find a nice place in the forest to do a walking meditation, explore. The forest is pretty safe for this time of year, so there are no tigers, there's no bears. Actually, there are bears, but they're all over in the corner over there. So it's all pretty safe. And all the kangaroos, there's no psychotic kangaroos, so they're safe too. So you can go for a walk, but make sure you don't get lost. So there is, stay within the fences, and there is just a place which goes up to what we call the Hermit's House, Hermit's Hill. Some of those places are monks in there, so don't go like one person did. They put their nose and there was a monk meditating inside, just looked like they were in a zoo. This is not a zoo, although you are allowed to feed the monks. But don't pet them. Same goes with the nuns. But just as a house at the top there, and so often Singaporeans got lost. And so they know Singaporeans up there. They're the only ones who actually get up there, and they just bring you back again afterwards. So we found another couple of lost Singaporeans. No need to do that. Just, you know, trace your steps back. You all have GPS on your smartphones? That's now.
No, there's no reception
center. Oh, yeah, it's good reception now. Oh. Up the top there. Yeah. Especially up in the, when you get to the top of the hill. So, no worries, should be okay. Yeah? Otherwise, you'll have to walk back to Singapore. Is that true? No, we're kind. Okie dokie. So, have a nice morning.